This is Tamara reading the Decatur Herald and Review. It's Wednesday, October 29th. Let's start with the front page. We have some great spooky photos on the front page. One from the home of Chris Murley, now known as Edgewater Mortuary. It's decorated for Halloween in Mount Zion. It's one of several homes in Mount Zion and across the area where residents show off their Halloween spirit with elaborate yard displays. One home is decorated for Halloween on Nottingham Court in Mount Zion. Decorations with lights are presented for Halloween at a home on Nottingham Court in Mount Zion on Monday. Looks like Mount Zion is a good spot to go look for Halloween spookiness. And finally, Secretariat Place in Mount Zion is another good spot for Halloween decorations. From Valerie Wells in Decatur, Energy, Decatur, ADM Google Back Gas Power Plant. Construction on 400 MW facility to start in 2026, capture carbon emission. Construction is expected to begin next year on a zero emissions gas power plant in Decatur. Plans for the Broad Wing Energy Center project got a needed boost after Google announced recently that it plans to purchase a majority of the power produced by the plant. The plant will be a natural gas-fired cogeneration power plant, producing more than 400 megawatts of power, with more than 90% of the carbon dioxide from the power plant captured and permanently stored more than a mile underground using Archer Daniels Midland's company's carbon capture and storage technology. No estimation for cost of the project has yet been given. Durham, North Carolina-based venture capital firm Eight Rivers and ADM announced in 2021 an agreement to build the first-of-its-kind clean energy complex near the latter's Decatur processing complex. ADM had already agreed to purchase power from the proposed plant, and all that was needed was a second company's commitment, said Nicole Bateman, president of the Economic Development Corporation of Decatur and Macon County. Google's plan is to use the power generated as a pilot project to a national expansion to power AI. By agreeing to buy most of the power it generates, Google is helping get this new baseload power source built and connected to the regional grid that supports our data centers, the company said in a news release. We hope it will accelerate the path for carbon capture and storage technology to become more accessible and affordable globally, helping to increase generating capacity while enabling emission reductions. Construction is slated to begin in the second quarter of 2026, with the plant opening in 2030. It will be located on the west side of Brush College Road between ADM and Caterpillar. It's estimated that over the four-year construction, it will create about 650 jobs, craftsmen and labor jobs, and 100 construction management staff. Then, once the power plant is operational, it will create 30 to 50 full-time jobs in Decatur, Bateman said. The project is opposed by Illinois People's Action, which says carbon capture and storage threatens the safety of the community's drinking water in Lake Decatur. What Google didn't say was the fact their partner ADM was in violation of the Federal Safe Drinking Water Act for 2 years while CO2 leaked at their site, said Don Dannebring, policy director at Illinois People's Action. This very same ADM site, and likely the Google project, seeks to store an additional 90 million tons of CO2 under Lake Decatur, the community's source of drinking water. In March 2024, it was discovered that more than 8,000 metric tons of injected carbon, about 3 days' worth of injection, seeped into unauthorized zones about 5,000 feet below the ground. This was about 500 feet above where ADM is permitted to store carbon. The leak was the result of corrosion in the company's other deep monitoring well, which was discovered in late 2023 and has since been plugged. It wasn't until September 2024 that ADM temporarily paused carbon dioxide injections below its North American headquarters in Decatur after tests revealed a seepage of fluids from a second monitoring well. That revelation came just over 6 weeks after the EPA cited ADM for allegedly violating the Safe Drinking Water Act and the terms of its carbon capture and sequestration permit for activity related to its other deep monitoring well. Both ADM and the EPA have stressed, however, that the leak never endangered drinking water supplies for people or livestock. ADM recently resumed the injection of carbon dioxide after wrapping up work to fix a leak required as part of an EPA administrative order. IPA contends carbon capture and storage is dangerous to sources of drinking water, an unproven technology and a false energy solution. Earlier in 2025, the group helped lead the successful campaign in Illinois to ban CO2 drilling under the Mahomet Aquifer that provides fresh water to over 1 million central Illinois residents. The Google ADM CCS facility lies outside the Mahomet Aquifer boundary. IPA is leading the fight in Illinois against CO2 sequestration with a denial of a similar CCS permit in McLean County in 2024, and recent public action against ADM's pending project in Decatur in September. Both the ADM and now Google project need U.S. EPA permit approvals. If we're going to help the state and corporate companies meet new clean energy goals, we need to utilize new technology, which includes the ability to capture the carbon and sequester it, Bateman said. Energy and energy technology is a huge driver of our economic future, and being a location that is able to prove that we are innovative in that area energy space is going to attract more companies to the area, which means more jobs, more housing, more retail, and more amenities. We'll continue now with news from state and nation. From Springfield, Brendan Moore, Capital News, Illinois. Jeffries accelerates Illinois redistricting push. House Minority Leader visits state from New York. While candidates filed petitions Monday to run under Illinois' existing congressional district lines, U.S. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries brought his redistricting campaign to Illinois, pitching top state Democrats on a new map in a series of closed-door meetings. Dozens of congressional candidates were in Springfield that morning for the biennial spectacle of petition filing for the primary election, which is slated for March 17th. At the same time, Jeffries met with members of the Illinois Legislative Black Caucus and black members of the state's congressional delegation in Chicago. Later Monday, he traveled to Illinois' capital city to meet with House Speaker Emanuel Chris Welch, Democrat Hillside, and Senate President Don Harmon, Democrat Oak Park, on the matter. Jeffries told reporters in the Capitol that his talks with Harmon and Welch were positive and focused on the need for us to keep all options on the table and respond decisively, which Welch echoed Jeffries' sentiment in a statement released after their meeting. State lawmakers returned to Springfield for the final 3 days of their fall veto session on Tuesday, likely their last trip to the Capitol until January. Even though dozens of Illinois congressional candidates have already filed their petitions, Jeffries downplayed any urgency for lawmakers to act this week. "We're not convinced that this is something that needs to happen in the next 2 to 3 days," Jeffries said. "It's something that needs to be strongly considered, and we can figure out a path forward." Governor J.B. Pritzker, who has been coy about redrawing Illinois' map, echoed Jeffries, telling reporters before he filed his petitions for re-election that redistricting was possible, but doesn't have to happen during veto session. "It could happen after that," Pritzker said, "but right now I think there's just a lot of conversation going on." Jeffries' push is meant to counter President Donald Trump's mid-decade redistricting project in GOP-led states ahead of the 2026 midterm elections. So far, Texas, Missouri, and North Carolina have redrawn their lines to favor Republicans. And Indiana Governor Mike Braun on Monday called a special session for his state's legislature next week to redraw the Hoosier state's map. "It's clear that Democrats are going to have to respond thoughtfully but forcefully across the nation," Jeffries said, citing the latest GOP remap effort. But Jeffries' pitch has been met with a cool reception from Illinois Democrats, who note that the state's map already has a 14-3 split in favor of the party. Black lawmakers had expressed concerns over the potential dilution of black voting power in the state's three historically black congressional districts. "I'm open to listening, but I think Illinois has done our fair share for the Democratic Party," said State Representative Marcus Evans, Democrat Chicago, in Springfield filing his petitions for re-election. I think there are some other states that can definitely do more. Jeffries told reporters that the 8 to 10 black lawmakers who attended the meeting in Chicago were very open-minded about finding a path forward. Our commitment is to make sure that the ability of black and Hispanic communities to continue to elect the candidates of their choice is not diluted in any way that will prevent that from happening now and into the future, Jeffries said. Illinois' lawmakers in 2021 enacted one of the most partisan gerrymanders in the country. Republicans have been relegated to just 18% of the state's congressional seats, despite President Donald Trump winning 43.5% of the statewide vote in 2024. Democrats achieved this by packing Republicans into as few districts as possible, while consolidating Democratic pockets of strength downstate and stretching out their partisan advantage in the Chicago region as far as they possibly could. But with Democrats' options to counteract Republican gerrymandering limited outside of California, they are turning to states like Illinois, where the party has unified control of state government, and the power to redistrict it is in the hands of the state legislature. Harmon, speaking with Capital News Illinois ahead of his meeting with Jeffries, said everything's on the table, but that he had not yet seen a concrete proposal. Jeffries confirmed that he did not show Harmon or Welch any maps during their back-to-back meetings in the legislative leaders' Capitol offices. If they were to move forward, lawmakers would have to consider moving the primary date or tweaking signature requirements for petitions. Noting the logistical challenges of a remap, Harmon, standing outside the Illinois State Board of Elections, said, "There's a whole lot of folks filing for Congress standing behind me in line right now. All things are possible, but timing is not optimal," Harmon said. "There are more candidates running for Congress than usual on account of a once-in-a-generation turnover among Democratic elected officials. Democratic Senator Dick Durbin's retirement set off a domino effect with two Democratic incumbents, Representative Robin Kelly of Lindwood and Representative Raja Krishnamurthy of Schaumburg, giving up their seats in bids to succeed him in the upper chamber. Representative Danny Davis, Democrat Chicago, and Representative Jan Schakowsky, Democrat Evanston, are retiring, thus creating a mad dash for safe Democratic seats that haven't been open in decades. State Representative LaShawn Ford, Democrat Chicago, one of 10 Democratic candidates who filed to run in Illinois' 7th Congressional District, a historically black seat based on Chicago's west side, said he would support a remap if it complies with Voting Rights Act provisions protecting majority-minority representation. "The goal is to do it right," Ford said. "We haven't seen a map, so there's no reason to be against something that we haven't seen." Representative Nikki Budzinski, Democrat Springfield, appearing at rally with Governor J.B. Pritzker and other top Illinois Democrats later Monday morning, said she was supportive of a new map. "If we can pick up a seat, I think we have to fight fire with fire," Budzinski, whose snaking district connects major Democratic constituencies in central and southern Illinois, said. "And I think there's a path forward to doing it." Budzinski acknowledged her concerns that a new map could dilute Democratic support in her district and thus make her more vulnerable to a Republican challenge. But she said, "I'm ready for a fight. If we don't have a check and balance on this administration after 2026, this country is going to look fundamentally different after 26, Budzinski said, adding that all options, as unprecedented as they are, should be on the table. From Jacksonville, Western Illinois, Bridget Fox, Jacksonville Journal-Courier. Drought holds in parts of Illinois. In mid-October, the National Weather Service for West Central Illinois announced worsening drought conditions with no improvements in sight or to be expected. "The lack of significant rainfall in the coming months should cause drought to persist or worsen," read an October 9th report from the National Weather Service. "Most of West Central Illinois is in severe or moderate drought, which isn't expected to get better quickly. Farmers across the state are reporting that the weather is eating into corn and soybean yields. They're also fighting the anxiety that hot equipment will start a stray fire on their field." David White, a farmer in Jacksonville, was standing on his neighbor's empty field with his son and neighbor standing nearby him. Emergency service vehicles were just starting to pull off when White got a call back from his insurance company. White said a stray ember from his corn head started a fire in his field, which ate away at 3 or 4 acres of his property. He called the fire department, but White said he knew he had to do something first. With help from his neighbor, who brought a tractor disc, they cut down the corn stalks around the on-fire area so it couldn't spread. White said this is the kind of thing he worries about often. He's had fires in his field before, but he said it's been years since the last one. As a precaution, he blows off any debris or fuzzies from his combine, so there's less chance for something to catch fire. It's been terribly dry, White said, standing next to charred corn stalks. We had almost about 0.3 inches the other night, and that's all the rain we've had in 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Meteorologist Nicole Albano said the area is really behind on the amount of rain we should have at this time of year. She also said it's not likely there will be enough rain to fix it quickly by the end of October. You got warmer than normal and drier than normal conditions expected, so it's not looking favorable for resolving the drought here by the end of the month, Albano said. At the end of September, officials were warning that this drought would be here for a while and urged caution. During drought conditions, a single spark can quickly ignite a field, said Jerry Costello, director of the Illinois Department of Agriculture. We want to remind farmers to treat every dry field as a potential fire hazard and to take the necessary precautions to prioritize their own safety, as well as their neighbors and first responders during this busy season. Officials also have advice for farmers. Inspect equipment daily, blow off debris on machines, lubricate machinery, inspect machine wiring, harvest during cool and less windy times, have a fire extinguisher in and outside of your machine cab. Keep a tractor with a disc nearby, schedule breaks, and call 911 right away if necessary. Dry vegetation in fields and wildland areas create high fuel loads that can ignite quickly and spread rapidly, putting farmers, nearby homes, and surrounding property at risk, said Illinois State Fire Marshal Michelle Pankow. Albano said people can make drought reports to help track the weather by clicking the links in their drought reports, which can be found at weather.gov, ILX, Drought Information Statement. Everybody knows that we're all in the same boat, White said. It's just the luck of the draw whether or not you have a fire in the next year or so. From Southern Illinois, Marie Adamick and Jeff Long, Effingham Daily News. Effingham Solar Farm on track. Project may take 2 years to clear red tape. A solar farm in Effingham, proposed earlier this year by Harvest Renewables, is still working its way through the approval process. Jamal Batar, the company's CEO and founder, wants to build a 7.5-megawatt DC community solar facility, which could power about 5,000 homes. They have an option on the property, Effingham Economic Development Director Todd Hull said in an interview last week. They have to do a lot of due diligence on the property before they can move forward on the project. There's a study that has to be done by Ameren. It takes up to a year to do that study, so they're just in a holding pattern right now. The facility would sit between the railroad tracks and Route 45 and west of JNR collision centers. Batar told the city council in February that it's an ideal location because the area is more than sufficient to handle the amount of capacity needed there, as well as the land being both flat and empty. Hull agrees that it's a good location because it sits away from the nearby railroad tracks. Founded in 2024 and headquartered in Salt Lake City at Harvest Renewables, we collaborate with landowners, policymakers, and communities to drive the adoption of renewable energy, says the company's website. As leaders in the field, we bring a wealth of experience and a proven track record in transforming opportunities into successful solar projects across the United States. These projects increase local tax revenues, funding schools and emergency services. Environmentally, they reduce CO2 emissions equivalent to taking thousands of cars off the road. Community solar also enhances energy independence, ensuring a reliable local energy source. Batar told Effingham officials he has been in the industry for more than 10 years and has other projects in the area. City residents and businesses will be able to request clean power from the facility, along with nearby cities and counties. Every commissioning event has always been joyful for us because we look at the faces of the residents in the community and the fact that, one, they get to see this generating unit in their community, and then recognizing the value on their utility bills and also recognizing the value that they're providing to the environment is very exciting for me, Batar said during his presentation. He estimated people will be able to save up to 10% on their utility bills, but the numbers aren't finalized. If things go smoothly, the development cycle will take about 2 years, in which Harvest Renewables will obtain permits from the city and approval from Ameren to connect to its system. Then development on the project will start, which will take 1 to 2 years. Once the facility is up and running, it will have a 20 to 25 year lifespan. It would definitely be advantageous to have that power coming on the grid here locally, Hull said. It would help keeping power on the grid and maybe alleviating some issues that they may have had were it not being put out there. Now from our opinion page, school standoff. From Inez Stepman. Trump right to hold elite universities accountable. American universities are at a crossroads. Their business model, which is overwhelmingly dependent on the twin pillars of federal grants and taxpayer-backed student loans, is failing in the face of declining public trust, financial malfeasance, a looming demographic cliff, and discrimination. President Donald Trump's administration recently sent a contract to a select few universities offering reforms. This would require universities to rein in escalating costs, primarily serve American students, and follow the law. They would be wise to take the olive branch, even if most of the universities are rejecting it. The first reason taking the Trump deal makes sense is simple. Universities are guilty of what the administration is accusing them of doing. They are wrongly using racial preferences in admissions and hiring. They also are flouting Title IX and Title VI requirements that protect the opportunities of women in sports and religious minorities on campus, respectively. They may be able to put up a temporary administrative fight and delay federal investigations. Still, the outcomes are ultimately not going to favor institutions that have embraced racial quotas, which have been illegal in hiring since 1964, in the name of racial reckoning. That is why high-profile Ivy League schools such as Harvard and Columbia have settled disputes with the Trump administration and are looking to downsize departments. They also raise higher endowment taxes in the One Big Beautiful Bill approved by Congress. Some of the provisions of the Trump contract he's offering universities merely enforce obligations universities already have under federal law. So universities have a simple choice: affirmatively accept the provisions of this contract or wait their turn to be sued. Other provisions in the Trump contract are eminently reasonable. For example, the administration asks universities to freeze runaway tuition for several years, cap foreign student enrollment at 15%, and instruct foreign students on American civic values to help them conduct themselves appropriately while guests in the United States. The contract demands that universities uphold their already existing obligation to respect the First Amendment and ensure that campuses are physically safe for conservative students and ideas to be debated. In light of conservative activist Charlie Kirk's murder on university grounds in Utah, this provision should be updated to demand that universities pay for all necessary security for speakers invited to campus rather than use security costs as a smokescreen for censorship. Some have argued that the contract is an incursion on academic freedom. Writing in the Chronicle of Higher Education, liberal and conservative scholars express concern about the autonomy of universities to maintain their truth-seeking mission. But this is laughable. Elite American universities are not free market entities unaccountable to the democratic process, and the idea they're engaged in truth-seeking doesn't pass the smell test. Instead, universities have used massive investment from taxpayers to advance their gatekeeping position at the start of pipelines to the elite. They also have failed typical Americans with outrageous prices, far-left activism, and fewer slots for their children. Voters are now asserting that this formula isn't remotely worth the investment. If this is the model universities want to keep, they can do it without billions in loans and grants from the federal government. But if they want to keep their privileged position one way or another, as they will have to submit to reforms such as those in Trump's contract, they need to offer a better deal to the American people who foot their bills. Elite universities are going to be held accountable. They would be smart to accept Trump's olive branch and change their ways before they are forced into reform by lawsuits, budget cuts, and popular opinion. Stepman is a senior policy and legal analyst at Independent Women. She wrote this for Independent Source, for InsideSources.com. Now our nutrition column from Barbara Intermill, a registered dietitian, author of Quintessential Nutrition, The Uncomplicated Science of Eating. Can diet help eczema? Kim H. from Nevada writes, I read an article you wrote about how gut health affects the brain and other parts of the body. Our 19-year-old son has severe eczema and is living in Hong Kong. We thought his eczema would get better because of the humidity there compared to dry Nevada, where we live, but that has not been the case. Are there other articles you've written about that address the eczema issue? We'd like to try the more natural route of help rather than the medical creams that don't really address the real issue going on within the gut, which brings on the eczema. Dear Kim, it's really not known what brings on eczema. Some researchers have reported a possible association between the diversity of microbes in a person's gut and the development of this condition. And since our diet has a lot to do with that, this might be part of the link. For readers not familiar with this condition, eczema refers to a group of inflammatory conditions that cause skin to become dry, itchy, flaky, and bumpy. The most common form of eczema is atopic dermatitis. While the exact cause of this irritating condition is not known, experts suspect it involves a combination of factors including our genetics and the environment in which we live, which includes the foods we eat. In fact, the National Eczema Association acknowledges that our diet is linked to many aspects of our health, including our skin. However, Dr. Peter Leo, clinical assistant professor of dermatology and pediatrics at Northwestern University, says researchers no longer think food allergies cause eczema. Now, he says, we know that eczema comes first. Allergies may follow when irritated skin allows food proteins to penetrate the skin's natural barrier. In truth, says Leo, the role of diet in the treatment of eczema is complex. Even though there is a deep connection between eczema and food allergy, there's no one food or eating style that will make this condition just go away. Still, if a food causes a flare-up of eczema every time you eat, you should avoid that food, he states. Most importantly, remember that eczema is an inflammatory condition, and wouldn't you know, nutrients that help quench inflammation in the body and on the skin are found in foods that also promote healthful and diverse gut bacteria. Fruits and vegetables, for example, are rich in dietary fiber, vitamin C, and antioxidants that keep inflammation at bay. Vitamin E and omega fatty acids found in nuts, salmon, and other dark-fleshed fish, avocados, and olive oil are also anti-inflammatory. Zinc found in seafood, lean meat, and whole grains, and probiotics in yogurt and other fermented foods also work to fight inflammation. We still have a lot to learn about this condition, but the role of nutrition appears extremely promising. Now, hints from Heloise. Dear Heloise, when brushing, you only need a pea-sized amount of toothpaste. Any more is not effective and wasteful. Rinsing after brushings is a non-issue, as you should be using a mouthwash that protects your teeth and can be spit out after rinsing for the required length of time. You also should not eat or drink for at least 30 minutes to allow it time to work. None of this should be swallowed on purpose. On another note, telemarketers are the reason why there is a do not call list. If you were on the list and they still call you, they should be reported. So if one calls, just tell them that your number is on the list and you will be reporting them if they call again. Then hang up. Manners are not important here. They are harassing you. Dear Heloise, I had a difficult time keeping my stuffed peppers upright, so I put them in one of those fluted cake pans to cook. It worked great. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for Wednesday, October 29th. Please stay tuned.